Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Curling is a sport that involves propelling granite rocks down a sheet of ice, attempting to land in a bullseye. It's one of the world's oldest team sports, originating in Scotland in the 16th century, where it was played on frozen ponds and lochs. For decades, curling fans and players were concentrated in countries with colder climates, but that is fast changing, especially in the U.S. after the men's curling team won the gold at the 2018 Olympics. We have a short clip of the moment that the gold medal was won.
Double takeout to potentially score five. One, two, 5 points for the USA.
That's the gold. That's the gold medal right there for USA.
It was a thrilling moment when a five-point end from John Schuster meant that the USA triumphed in front of a large crowd to win their first curling gold. Joining us on the phone is a member of the team, Tyler George. Welcome, Tyler, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. The U.S. team was the underdog going into the 2018 games. You had some pretty stiff competition from Canada and Sweden, among others. Describe the feeling you had at the moment you realized the team had won the gold.
Well, it was kind of bizarre because the moment that we felt like we clinched the game wasn't over yet. So, you know, it's one of those things that you have to try to stay focused and finish the game off without thinking about being on the podium quite yet. And the last few shots we threw in that game were a lot harder than the ones to get there, just because when it's already pretty much clinched but not technically over, then you have to still focus on little things and finishing the game off. But once it was actually done and we realized we were Olympic champions, it was just a surreal feeling that still hasn't really sunk in over a year later.
You are a three-time past U.S. men's national champion. How does curling at international competitions differ from curling here at home?
The competition is going to be a lot stiffer. We play the vast majority of our tournaments in Canada, probably about 90% of them. And if you take the world rankings and top 15 teams in the world, I think a dozen of them are from Canada. So if you're playing against teams from other countries, then obviously with us being the top ranked team in the U.S., then we're expected to win when we play down here. But when we travel, then we're playing against a lot tougher teams and some harsher atmospheres with Canadian fans and everything, too. So it's a lot tougher. It's tough to get wins when you go north of the border or even across the pond to Europe. But something we became accustomed to over the 4 years leading up to the Olympics, and we felt very comfortable over in South Korea because of that experience. Mm.
Now, your hometown is Duluth, Minnesota. So when you were first introduced to curling, how popular was that game in Duluth?
Minnesota is kind of a curling hotbed in the United States, and Duluth has one of the nicest clubs in the country, too. I grew up around the sport. I grew up in a curling club, so to me it was always popular, but it's still kind of a niche sport. It's not like it's up there with hockey or baseball or anything in Minnesota, but more popular there than probably anywhere else in the country. And we're seeing that popularity grow a lot now since the Olympics, due in large part to our win, and we're hoping to keep that momentum going with the sport, too.
Yeah. So for listeners who aren't familiar with the sport, just sort of give us an overview of how it's played.
It's basically an ice sport that's played on a 140-foot sheet of ice. There's 12-foot bullseyes called houses at each end, and you're throwing 42-pound granite stones at these bullseyes, trying to get them closer to the center of the target than the other team. And you count up all the points after each team has thrown eight stones. There's four players on each team. Each throws two. When all 16 stones have been thrown at each end, which is like an inning in baseball, then they count points based on how many stones you have closer to the middle of the circle than the other team.
And there are no referees needed in curling, right? So the competitors, you call your own fouls?
We have officials in major competition, but the vast majority of games are played without officials there, like the tournaments that we play leading up to the national championships or world championships or Olympics. If you have an infraction of some sort, then it's a gentleman's game, like golf. You're expected to call yourself out on those fouls.
Now, so how often do differences in opinion arise among competitors, and how are they settled?
It's pretty rare. It is a gentleman's game, and it's played that way. I can count on one hand the number of times that I've been involved in a game where there was a dispute over a foul in the thousands of games that I've played. Usually they're fairly easy to see. Mm-hmm. So it could be something really small, like if you touch a moving stone, then if it doesn't move to the point that both teams can see it, but you know you touched it, then it's really on you to call that out. And it just doesn't happen very often that those things aren't called, thankfully.
Yeah. So why do you think self-refereeing works so well in curling? I know you're saying it's a gentleman's sport. Is it? I'm just in the little bit of experience I've had with the curling. Everybody's so polite to each other. It isn't that, you know, kind of in baseball you have kind of the trash talk. You know, you don't see that in curling.
Yeah, it's a really tight-knit community, and I think that's part of why players are able to police themselves that way. If somebody were to take advantage of a rules infraction for their own favor in a dishonest way, then those things get around. I mean, you don't forget those things on tour. And with everybody being as close as they are, you would garner a reputation for something like that, and that's something nobody wants.
Mm. In the professional sports of football, baseball, basketball, players move between teams sometimes from season to season. If there were a curling league, could curlers move from team to team and maintain that same level of success, or is curling a sport where the cohesion between the players is pretty much essential?
You do see a lot of movement, I would say, between Olympic quads. So very rarely does a team break up in the middle of from 2014 to 2018 with the two Winter Olympics. Like a team probably wouldn't reform in 2016 or something like that. But teams do have a shelf life, so there's no trades or anything like that usually. But if a team feels like their run is up after an Olympic quad, so they go through the Olympic trials, whether they win or not, then you might see a new team form after that. There's a lot of shuffling every 4 years. Mm-hmm. Some teams make it 8 years, 12 years, but very rarely does it happen like right in the middle in between those Olympic quads.
So when you're competing, how much time do you spend training, and how do you train?
It's the same as any other sport, really. We're training all the time. It's difficult because as an amateur sport, we have jobs that we have to go home to and everything too. But basically all of our time that we're not working, we're training, practicing, traveling for tournaments. And a ton of our practice is going to tournaments too, the time that we get together as a team. But the physical training is a lot of cardiovascular stuff. Sweeping is a lot more difficult than it looks like on TV. And we do a lot of interval training because the sweeping is kind of on and off while we do it, in, you know, with our shots and then the opponent's shot, and then you're back on again. So you might be going all out physically for 30 seconds, then off for 30 seconds, and then back on again. So the interval training is huge. A lot of lower body strength for the kick out of the hack. We are trying to move 42-pound stones down the ice all the time, so that can be a little bit difficult. And a lot of flexibility training because those positions that we get in on the ice aren't the easiest things to get into either. So there's a lot more to it. And anybody that goes on the ice and tries the sport for the first time realizes exactly how physical it is and that, you know, how easy we make it look on TV is
right.
What it's like in real life.
Yeah, you mentioned sweeping, and I think some people probably have that image of the broom. Tell us about what the sweeping's all about.
Sweeping can make a rock go farther. It can make a rock go straighter. And it also cleans the path in front of the stone so nothing gets underneath it. The friction that it creates, there's a brief moment where there's heat, and that actually makes the rock carry farther. So, and the faster a rock is going, the straighter it goes. So that's why it actually goes straighter when you sweep too.
What do you find most challenging about the sport?
Tough question. It's kind of... The concept of it is kind of like golf, where anybody can play it, but it takes a lifetime to master. So you could step on the ice for the first time the same way you could step on the first tee of a golf course the first time, hit a perfect drive. You could throw a perfect shot. You might fall down doing it, but you know, repeating it over and over is extremely difficult. And the misses in curling are similar to golf, where you feel like if you play consistently, you should make every shot. But it's just not going to happen. It's impossible to be that consistent. So the biggest difficulty is limiting the misses and making them not as extreme to the point where you couldn't come back from it.
Mm.
So really, made shots are going to happen at a high level of competition the vast majority of the time. But the winning teams in those top level games are the ones that can somehow limit those misses more than their opponents.
You're currently on the Curling Federation's Olympic Celebration Tour, and you're going to be visiting the Cape next week as part of that tour. What kind of reception have you gotten so far on the tour, and do you see Americans becoming more interested in curling as you're going around talking to folks?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's kind of a combination tour for me between the World Curling Federation's Olympic Celebration Tour that you mentioned and then my ambassador role with USA Curling. So, but I'm doing the same types of things with each tour. And everywhere I go, I'm surprised at the level of enthusiasm for the sport now, especially since our win a year ago. And we see a bump in popularity every 4 years just because of the Olympic exposure. I mean, curling is on all the time during the Olympics. But it's to a level we've never seen before because of our win. And we're really trying to keep that momentum going for the entire Olympic quad until the next time we get that exposure, too. Getting on TV more, getting around to pockets of the country where curling is growing. You know, we're seeing membership doubling in places like Florida, California, Arizona, up in the Northeast. And this is a huge time for us. And the enthusiasm that I get to see firsthand in all these stops is really fulfilling for me. And I'm really excited about where the sport's going over the next 4 to 8 years. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see membership for our entire country double.
Do you plan to continue curling competitively?
At this point, no. I haven't made that decision for the long term as of yet. I'm really happy with what I'm doing. I know I can do more for the sport off the ice than on it right now, and that's really important to me. It's one of those few times in life where you put in a lot of work into something and you're not sure if it's worth it until you get to the other side of it. And now, you know, even if you discounted our win, which obviously means the world to us, being in a position where I can do what I'm doing for the sport is the most meaningful part to me in all of it, because I love the people, I love the game itself, and I love opening it up to our country so they can see why we love it as much as we do. So if the desire to play comes back, then I can certainly still step back in and do it. But as of right now, I'm just really feeling good about what I'm doing off the ice, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned growing up in, you know, in a curling club, so you started as a kid, and I'm just thinking of the folks that I've seen at the curling club here. They're all ages. I mean, from, you know, these young kids up to, you know, in their 90s. So I'm imagining that you are probably going to be involved in this sport for the rest of your life. Am I right?
Yeah, it's a lifetime sport. Whether you're competing or not, the friends that you make through the sport are the ones that you keep your entire life. And I think that's the thing that I try to get across to parents more than anybody else when we're traveling. You know, if your kids start playing, they're going to be in something that's going to help them develop in life and give them lifelong friends. You know, maybe your kid's not the strongest or the fastest or jumps the highest, but regardless of what level of competition they want to play to, getting them involved in the curling community is a great thing for their life. I'd have half the friends I have in the world if it wasn't for the sport, and it extends all the way up to the elite levels, too. The Swedes that we played in the gold medal game, two of the guys were at my teammates' wedding the previous summer. The Canadians that we played in the semis, we play fantasy football against those guys. So these are our lifelong friends, besides that we're competing against them at the Olympics. And you see that right down to the start of curling at your junior level or your rec leagues right up to the Olympics. And that's the best part about the sport.
Tyler George is a 3-time U.S. men's national champion curler, member of the men's curling team that won the gold at the 2018 Olympics. He'll be on Cape Cod March 14th through the 16th visiting schools, and he'll be making an appearance at the Cape Cod Curling Club in Falmouth. We'll have details about his visit at our website, capeandislands.org. Tyler George, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Coming up after break, we talk about the physical and cognitive benefits of curling and get on the ice with some Cape Cod curlers. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about curling this hour. Last month, we visited the Cape Cod Curling Club to meet some of the younger players. We start with 9-year-old Ellie Bennett, who volunteered to give us a play-by-play of the practice session.
Can you tell me what just happened there?
So they just split up the teams and did the coin toss to determine who had the hammer and who was going first and what color.
What is the hammer?
The hammer is going second, which means you'll get the last shot at the end of the end. And now they're just shaking hands and saying good curling.
Good curling.
Curling. Is that how you start every game?
Yes, and how you end it. So the skips are the people who call the shots. and they stand down at the other house waiting for the rocks to come in. They point out with their brooms where they want the rock to land and what handle they want, whether they want the handle on the rock pointing left or right. So he just made a play trying for a guard. It was a little heavy, and the sweepers always have to follow the rock, being ready to sweep it to make it go faster. And you really can't make it go slower. There's one way that doesn't work too well that someone told me once. You sweep behind the rock, but that doesn't work too well. The sweeping has to be fast or else it won't give any more momentum to the rock like it's supposed to be. Sweeping is trying to melt the bumps on the ice to make the rock go down smoother. And that's what makes it go faster, smoothening the ice because of the bumps that they make by pebbling the ice. They use hot water to spray the ice with to melt some of the ice so it makes bumps so the rock won't go too fast but also not too slow. Oh goodness, the rock came at someone's foot and it changed the complete direction of the rock, and now I think they're taking the rock out and not counting it. That proves that you have to be a little more careful with the rocks when you're sweeping. I think we're going for a middle guard. Looks a little heavy. It's going really fast, so I don't know how this is going to turn out because I haven't seen anything like this. It went way past the house, and they wanted it in front of the house as a guard to guard some of their rocks to keep the blue team from knocking them out. Like, red is up again and maybe trying for a little bit of a lighter shot. And when you're a beginner, this is his first day. When you're a beginner, it's a little harder to control how much or how little you put in to how much. What's the word I'm looking for? Energy. If it doesn't make it past the line, it is out. Actually, I think it would have gone past the line, but someone could have burned the rock. That's when your brim touches the rock, and that causes the rock to be out and not even make it. I think our vices are up, and they're aiming for my little sister, the vice, to go for a double takeout, which is a very tricky shot for a six-year-old. She's going to bump the two blues out in exchange for her red to go in. She definitely has enough oomph, but something went wrong with the handle turn, and her rock ended up going outside where they wanted it to go. But it still made it past the hog line. She has some pretty good oomph in her. It is possibly a nice guard. It's still counting. It's in, but not too close to the house. And it looks like blue has a junior on their team who is throwing. And she had a very nice shot here. She is also one of my sisters. And they could make it in. I'm not sure about it. Almost.
Anna Bennett, I'm 13.
And how long have you been curling?
3.5 years.
What got you started?
It was like a February break thing, and my parents were like, just try it, and I ended up really loving it, so.
And then two of your sisters are here playing too?
Yeah.
Did you convince them to do it?
Or? They kind of just decided, like, they wanted to be involved when they saw me playing, and they went to my first Bonspiel, and it was like, they wanted to play, so.
Can I talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
What is your name?
Grace.
How old are you?
6.
How long have you been curling?
Do you know? 3 years.
What's your favorite part?
Human curling. Basically, you get two sliders on, and the coaches get a broom, and you hold on to the broom, and then they basically throw you down the ice.
Rich Rogers. I'm one of the coaches here. My first year coaching, so.
How do you try to keep it fun for them?
We try not doing the same thing every practice. We only have 2 practices a week. And they're pretty laid back, you know, no pressure on the kids to show up, you know, come as you want, go as you want. We do human curling that they're doing now. You can probably hear them in the background. We throw them down the ice on 2 sliders. We do mini curling where it works on strategy and they don't really have to work as hard on sweeping. But play some ends and have fun, make them laugh.
Is there something that kids can do better than adults?
Yeah, they're more flexible, so they can get lower to the ice. And if they fall, it doesn't hurt. Adults, if we fall, it hurts a little more. It takes us a couple more days to get back. So they're definitely more flexible and learn a lot quicker, I feel like, than some of the adults I've had to teach.
And how long have you been curling?
This is my first year, really. My daughter wanted to try it 3 years ago, and I just sat and watched for 2 years. And then Coach John, the other coach, said he couldn't really coach anymore, and if he wants to keep the program going, I was going to have to take over. But I'm glad he did it because now I'm coaching and my 2 kids do it. They're not here today, but it's my son's first year, my daughter's 3rd year. So it's fun. It's a good little family thing. My wife does it too. So family that curls together stays together, I guess.
My name is Silas Clark. I'm 16. I started earlier this year or earlier last year. So I have about 2 months experience, but I enjoy it a lot. My grandfather, who's been curling a lot before, he had me and my dad come in earlier and do a few test lessons to see if I enjoyed it, and I did, so I thought to pick it up. It's a lot of weight distribution. It's more complicated than you might initially think, but it's a lot of technique, it's a lot of balance, and it's just a good combination for a relaxing yet challenging sport.
I'm Ryan Waite, and I'm 15. I've been curling since 5th grade. I've been to a bunch of Bonspiels since then. Well, I think definitely accuracy is actually really tough, and all the Olympic people definitely make it look really easy. And also, I don't do much of the strategy kind of stuff, but that is also very complex. I have a couple positions I like to play, but it is pretty freeform, and we will mix it up a lot between practices. I like to do second or vice. Second and vice have... You get a good distribution of different shots that you might do, and it isn't skipped, so I don't have to actually think about where the stones have to be placed. I can just follow the instructions of my skip. And it also isn't lead, which pretty much is only just doing guards or draws, which I'm not too good at.
I haven't had too much experience with skip or vice, but I'm very fond of second and lead, where you are primarily responsible for setting up guards and walls for later stones to be sent behind. That's a lot of precise throwing, but I enjoy it. Seeing the Olympic curling team, the last opportunity I had to watch them, and just being amazed at how easily and how smoothly they went down the ice or sent the stones into exactly where they into the exact position where they wanted it.
Especially in a Bonspiel, after every couple of games, they'll go through and pebble the ice and scrape it, putting on like a fresh coat that allows the stones to move well over it. And the ice can actually kind of change over the course of a game. In the beginning, it can be really slow. You can need to put a lot of effort into your throws to get them there. But then the ice can speed up over the course of the game, which can change play in that the stones can curl less or curl more depending on the ice conditions. Well, it's quite fun, and it's actually a really social sport. Even out in a Bonspiel, there isn't too much competition, and the teams are nice to each other, and it's just an overall fun experience.
I'd have to say the same thing. It's a lot of social interaction, not just between your team, but the other team. It's never a huge competitive kind of environment. It's all very comfortable, and no one needs to be like stressed out about anything. It's all just a team sport.
When a team makes a great shot, even if it really harms the other team, they're generally not too mean about it. They can sometimes like applaud or just be happy for the other team, yeah.
Those were some of the little rockers and junior players at the Cape Cod Curling Club in Falmouth. Joining us in studio now is Robert Dunkley and Matina Heisler, both members of the Cape Cod Curling Club. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
Just want to say that little Ellie there, if there's ever a need down the line for a play-by-play announcer,
right?
she's got it, right?
She's terrific.
Mindy, she's coming after you.
Yeah. So how young are some of these players? I heard 6 years old. When can you actually start playing?
On the website, I think it says as young as when you can push the stone down the ice. And I think it helps, too. Yeah, that was a six-year-old whose older siblings playing. So probably, you know, watching the older kids out there, like she had to get out there herself.
Yeah. Well, and plus there were smaller rocks for the younger kids that we called them junior rocks. But there's so much physics and engineering to the whole being 42 pounds, as Tyler had said, that makes a big difference. And I think we've transitioned heavily to go to the 42 pounds. So it's difficult when somebody's 4 years old and about 40
and
pounds to be moving a 40-pound
right,
rock.
Yeah. So 866-999-4626 is our number if you have comments or questions this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So there's this vibrant, expanding community of curlers on the Cape. And, of course, it's kind of associated with a cold weather sport, right?
Absolutely.
So when was the Cape Cod Curling Club in Falmouth established, and what was the impetus for it?
I think it was in 1969, right?
Correct. We're celebrating our 50th year this year. Actually, that's been a big step.
Yeah. And Dave DeWeese was the founder and had a number of other members of the community. I'm going to guess some displaced Canadians, because, of course, in Canada, curling is huge, relatively speaking, that were introduced to the sport and loved it and wanted to bring it here.
Exactly. A lot of the curling has started in arenas. The one thing that hasn't been mentioned is it's an expensive sport because you have to have a facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the luxury that we have a facility here. We have one. And what surprises me is that there's so few really in the U.S. and any of them are all towards the Canadian border. And that's where, with us having a facility here, it's so important, makes such a difference. In Canada is a big, as Tyler had mentioned, that they go to Canada to compete in the heavier games or more competitive games. And the reality is because of the money, I guess, is what is the hindrance. Sort of forgot my
but
thought there.
I just want to interject. When you say it's an expensive sport, it's not an expensive sport to play.
Right.
You know, if you are just from the get-go just trying to build a facility, obviously building any kind of ice facility is expensive.
Right.
We're lucky we have one here.
Mm-hmm.
Expenses to play is actually, I would say, it's probably one of the least expensive sports that you could play. There's very little equipment. I think our the costs to just be in a league are very low.
Yeah.
So I
want to talk to each of you on here. How long have you been curling, and what attracted you to the sport, Matina?
Well, I started when I was around eight.
Eight, wow.
And grew up here on the Cape. So started here on the Cape when I was eight. So in terms of what attracted me to the sport, I think probably my parents were curling briefly. They actually, I think they, I don't know. So
they
their
left.
Schedules, yeah, they left. I continued on. They left. They're social members of the curling club. It's a sport that also gives you community. So it's really not just about curling. It's you it becomes, you know, your family, really.
And that was what I was thinking. A lot of the Canadian clubs are on golf clubs. And because obviously with winter, the golf season ends and the curling season would start. So that's really where, you know, we've got it's a full year if you have a golf club with a curling club. So any golf club owners out there, you might want to think about that.
Think about that, yeah. make enough money in the summer to put that ice in, right?
Exactly. But coming from arena, it's so important, the ice condition, that even Ellie, our younger one, was talking about the ice and how it's done. And that makes a big difference, where a lot of curling clubs, one of our members, Russ Lemke's been instrumental in bringing curling to a lot of other arenas around New England, for sure, Boston, in Providence. They also are just starting a club out in Orleans.
Nantucket.
You know, it's to get people to introduce them to this sport, and then obviously then the ice improves.
Right. How did you get started?
Long story, but I was actually born in Canada, so I started when I was in high school. I tried it, but I basically came to the Cape, to the Vineyard. Actually, was where I grew up, and when they didn't even have an ice rink at that time, and I remember suggesting that they could pull the boards a little bit back or move it so that they could put one sheet of curling. But I think, being coming from a 16-year-old, it wasn't really given a lot of credit.
Yeah.
But one of the things I think should be mentioned here on the Cape is we have a lot of older people retiring to the Cape. And that's the nice thing, I think, if people are listening, they're hearing Ellie, who's six. And then, you know, a little kept secret is we have Ralph Vaccaro, who's in the Guinness Book of World Records as the oldest curler in the world. And he's here on Cape Cod. He's famous.
How old is he?
And he's 97.
97, wow.
So, but rumor.
So this is a lifetime sport, as we were saying.
Completely.
Earlier. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about curling this hour with Robert Doc Dunkley and Matina Heisler, both members of the Cape Cod Curling Club. If you have questions or thoughts about curling, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. In the first segment, we were talking to Tyler. Tyler talked about how physical this game can be, and so obviously the physical benefits, but there's also cognitive benefits to playing this. I mean, talk a little bit about that.
Well, there definitely is. The curling is...
we call it strategy.
Yeah. Depending on how well we're playing, right? I think we joke that there has to be like at least one engineer on every curling team. It just seems like you go out to tournaments and it just really appeals to engineers and scientists. There's a lot of science behind it. There is strategy. It's a lot of learning the ice, we say, because every day you go out there, the ice plays a little bit differently. And so you have to adapt every game to how that ice is playing. So there's a lot to it. And then also just in terms of, it's very much a mental sport. So you're just... how you're feeling when you go out on the ice. You've got to really focus, and that makes all the difference in the world.
Obviously, there's a lot of strategy to it. There's a lot of patience to the game. Mm-hmm. And I think even Tyler mentioned that it's a very gentlemanly game. You call your own errors. It's a very honest game, and that's what I think is also nice about it. But you can play the game aggressively, or you can play it defensively. It's got a lot of dynamics, and we've only got how much time today?
Well, you know, that's the thing. We're talking about, there's a social element to it. It's competitive, but it's also friendly. So I guess, how do you describe the spirit of curling? It's a hard thing to put into words, isn't it?
I think one of the things we're here on Cape Cod, but you can literally go anywhere in the world or around the world to the colder climates and play the game of curling to somebody that doesn't speak English in their own environment, and they play the game exactly the same way that you do. And you will, I mean, I know we have members of our club that have people from all over the world
They'll just drop into a curling club. You know, they might be in
absolutely.
Some foreign country. They can't speak the language, right? But they can just pop into a curling club, and they're going to make friends.
Yeah.
And one of the things you got to remember is that we lost one of our greatest members, Tony Colaccio, this past year, and he's been instrumental in wheelchair curling here on the Cape. We've actually got two curlers from the Cape Club here that are on the Paralympic team
and
on the world circuit right now in Scotland.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's
yeah, modifications. Yeah.
It's big.
Let's talk to Evelyn, who is giving us a call from Chatham. Good morning, Evelyn.
Oh. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, go ahead.
I bet you we know this, Evelyn.
I'd like to say that there is another curling option on Cape Cod.
Yeah.
I am a former Cape Cod curler and a longtime curler from many other clubs in the U.S. And for this past year, I have been working with the Charles Moore Arena in Orleans as a volunteer facilitator to help them form the Lower Cape Curling Club, which has been in existence now since September.
Very exciting.
And we have four sheets of ice in an arena and are teaching many curlers out here at the Lower Cape to get involved in the sport and loving it.
All right. Well, Evelyn, thanks for that. And you did mention briefly Orleans. So,
Evelyn,
yeah.
I did mention it.
No, we do have we have some. Yeah, I know. And we're very excited about that, too, in the Cape Cod Club, because it'd be, I mean, about that club and the Nantucket Club, it's going to be fun to have more facilities.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking for more people to beat.
Yeah. Oh, shush.
Evelyn, thank you. Thanks for the phone call, Evelyn. So with the growing, we talked about this. Tyler talked about this interest since the U.S. had that Olympic win. Is that what you're seeing in Falmouth? Are you seeing more people coming and going, hey, I want to learn how to do this?
Yeah, we've had a nice crop of new curlers this year. And
it's been definitely been nationally. All of the clubs.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, it's been growing, I'm sure, since the Olympics, we're seeing these arena clubs pop up all over the place. And that really is the first step towards building a dedicated facility. You've got to get people like really into the sport and passionate about it. And then they start to want that dedicated ice facility, because there is a difference between dedicated ice and arena ice.
Secret's out now, right? That secret little club in Falmouth is not a secret anymore.
Yeah. Everybody needs to check it out. Yeah.
Right. Let's talk to Stephen, who's giving us a call from Centerville. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Just wanted to say thanks for the show. Quick point. My uncle Ralph is actually 99.
99? That's terrific.
Wow.
He's turning 100 in April. I mean, percentage wise, it's not a big deal, but, you know, 2 years is 2 years.
Stephen, thanks for calling.
And another quick point. I think, unfortunately or fortunately, depends how you look at it, he's been surpassed. I believe they've identified another curler that's older than my uncle.
Wow.
Well, I think it was a woman in, I believe, British Columbia was fighting to beat Ralph. So I think that might have happened this year. You probably know more than me.
Yeah.
Actually, I know nothing about. I just know he's a family legend. So whenever we see him, it's always, how's it going?
Yeah.
In any event, thanks for your show.
Sure. Thanks for calling. All right. So Liz sent a note. She says, where is this curling club? Can I watch or play? Right. And we will have links up on the website to more information. But Liz, yes, it's in Falmouth, up there near Falmouth Academy.
Highfield Road.
Highfield Road.
Yep.
Thank you. I couldn't remember the name of the
road. So you're right. On the same drive as Highfield Hall and
people can come and watch, right?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And there's generally curling going on. We have a very busy club. We're lucky because of our demographics that we have curling going on.
A lot.
All the time, yeah. I mean, not in the dead of night, but I think they start around 9 o'clock in the morning, and then with pickup curling. And then they have some morning leagues, and then they have 4 o'clock leagues that are very popular. And then in the evening, they generally do two draws, so one at 6:15 and one at 8:30.
So you talked a little bit about the wheelchair curling and different modifications. So let's say somebody maybe can't sweep, but they could play another position.
Yep.
Do you make exceptions like that?
Yeah. Exactly. Generally, wheelchair teams don't sweep at all. Mm-hmm. So it makes a little bit more of a challenge for those shooters. But we often have, my competitive team for the club championship was, I always had Dave Palmer. He was a local resident in Mashpee that moved to Florida, but he was our skip and he was wheelchair, and then my two boys. So it's just get out there and curl is really what it comes down
to. It's pretty exciting now. I mean, Tony Colaccio he really had such foresight. He put in a ramp to our ice when we were doing an expansion at the club. He decided he really wanted to bring wheelchair curling to Cape Cod. And he put in this ramp and he went out and started recruiting wheelchair curlers and built up a whole program so that we're lucky we now have truly excellent wheelchair curlers. But we also have quite a few of them now. So it's really... I would say every league that I'm playing in, there's wheelchair curlers out there on the ice. And now we don't think anything about it. You know, it's just like, it's just part of the game that you're probably going to have,
Absolutely.
866-999-4626 is our number if you have comments or questions about curling this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Falmouth Public Schools have been teaching gym curling, right? So how does that work? Do they come to your club? I mean,
No.
I was going to say, what I know that they have done gym curling, which was basically they're wooden rocks with rollers.
It's
more to get them to introduce them to the sport, to get them more interested, and then they bring the fourth grade class, I believe, for the season for them to actually play on the ice.
Check it out.
And then we also have I know one of the Falmouth schools is got a seventh grade class, I believe, that is coming once a week. And then I know the Sandwich High School was interested in participating as well. So it's if we can get more young people involved, then I think we could increase the amount of league that we would have.
So what do you need to curl? What kind of equipment do you need?
You don't need a whole lot. I mean, we bring in our new curlers. They come and they're out on the ice with nothing purchased of their own when they first start out. But what you need is special sneakers. And basically one foot has what we call a gripper on it. So it's kind of regular sneaker. And then the other one has Teflon on the bottom so that you can kind of scoot around on the ice on your Teflon sneaker. And then you need a broom. And that is it. Some warm clothes.
Yeah. Well, and I think Tyler mentioned it. It's like golf. You can hit the ball once and go, wow, this is great. And you can spend a lifetime trying to do that same shot again.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with curling. I think if you take a couple of shots and you get the bug, it will then be okay.
I think Tyler is actually famous, right, for having the rattiest pair of sneakers. There was a New York Times article where they showed off his curling sneakers that I don't know how long he's had them, like for years and years and years. But it's not like golf where they're constantly trying to scientifically modify every piece of equipment. I mean,
he's realized that those ratty old shoes work.
That's right. That's right. They were really work
exactly.
for him.
So let's talk about the rocks themselves. They're really beautiful. So like this polished granite, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very special granite.
Special granite that is north of Scotland, I think. Mm-hmm. An island off the coast of Scotland, I believe.
Where they mine it.
Because these rocks are hitting at pretty good impact. And obviously it could shatter. So this particular type of granite, this particular granite, my understanding is that it's very dense. So the energy is transferred very easily into the next rock.
Yeah.
And when you're in when you have these rocks in houses, you're tapping your rock, you're tapping your opponent's rock. You're using the strategy of the weight and chipping with how much weight you have. I think, as Ellie had said, you know, the double takeout is a challenge.
But, and, you know, we talk about throwing rocks. You're not throwing these rocks.
You're not literally throwing
it. No, you're really gliding them down the ice. And, I mean, you can imagine, you know, six-year-old, I can't remember, was it Grace, right?
Yeah.
Was able to get her rock down the sheet of ice. So it's not like you need buckets of upper body strength.
We got an email from Sarah. She says, I'm a founding member of the Nantucket Curling Club, started in 2016 with help from the Cape Cod Curling Club. If anyone wants more info about our program, league, and learn to curls, check out the Nantucket Curling Club Facebook page and website. And again, we'll have links to everybody's stuff at our website, CapeAndIslands.org. All right, so at the upper level teams, are they divided between men and women, or are there mixed competitions? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have there's men's and women's, and then there's age brackets too, where you have you know, juniors and seniors, and then they have mixed, which is has to alternate male female, or you know, vice versa, and then they have mixed doubles, which is just it's different rules than your typical curling game, and that is just male female.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of like in golf, like the best shot. You know, whoever's ball is in the best position, then everybody shoots from that location. Kind of, it's altering the game a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, the piece we heard that Amy Vince did, we heard the coach talking about, he was sitting on the sidelines watching his daughter for a couple of years, and it was like, okay, we want to continue this. Now you have to be a coach. So I'm just thinking about the family aspect of this. I mean, you got a lot of kids, and what I love about it is that gentlemanly way, you know, there's no trash talking it, but the kids, you know, these younger players, in a lot of ways, they're really acquiring leadership skills, decision making, you know, team building skills with this.
And I think that's part of why they are doing the gym curling, because, you know, it's a lot about what makes curling great is not the ice, right? Mm-hmm. It is so much about teaching that sportsmanship and that camaraderie. And I think that that's why they tried to bring those aspects of the sport to the gym curling program. Mm-hmm.
And it teaches also politeness. I mean, after the game, we shake hands and, you know, good curling. And then we always sit afterwards with the team and have a drink with them and chat. And so you become, like Tyler said, I mean, he's bringing the two of the Canadian teams to a wedding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me just does not surprise me at all. I mean, that's completely.
Yeah, so you can still be competitive.
Absolutely.
Yet civil. Yeah, something we can use.
Well, more than civil. I mean, more than civil. Yeah. Friendly. Yeah,
friendly.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're playing against your friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have respect. I mean, I have respect for Matina.
Oh, that's funny. All right, well, we're going to put links with more information about curling and U.S. gold medal curler Tyler George's schedule of events when he visits Cape Cod at our website, CapeAndIslands.org. And you've got a whole bunch of things going on that people can come
very
in
exciting.
And see. Robert Doc Dunkley and Matina Heisler, thank you for coming in and
thank
sharing the sport of curling with us this morning.
Well, thanks for having an interest.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistants from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.